Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. My distinguished guest is awaiting introduction before I bring him on. This show is so much of my conversation is dedicated to disreputable and despicable human beings, Donald Trump being at the top of the list, in my humble opinion. We'll be discussing Carrie Lake in Arizona. She's on that list as well. I just want to give a shout out before we go to a woman whose obituary I just read in the New York Times today as I was preparing for the show. What a courageous woman she was. Shani Mott is her name, and she's a scholar of race and power in America. She died of cancer way too young at age 47. A couple of things caught my eye when I was reading her obituary. One, how young she is or was, 47 years old. How tragic that is. Two, she's from Chicago. She was born in Chicago. So it was like a Chicagoan doing well in the world. She moved on to Baltimore, where she was a professor at Johns Hopkins. But just this caught my eye. So she and her husband were trying to get a second mortgage on their home in Baltimore, and they were they were denied essentially, and so they thought there was the finance company was up to no good. And there was some racial prejudice against them. They're both black. So they tried a little trick there. They applied a second time and had a white colleague stand in for them when the appraiser came for a visit. And the second appraisal was almost 60% higher than the first. It's a big surprise. And so they sued, and the lawsuit was finding its way through the courts. She sat for a deposition right before she died, and her husband had this to say about it. She was very ill with cancer, but she wanted to do the deposition. So days before her death, she gave an eight-hour deposition in the appraisal suit. She declined to take her pain medication, her husband said, so that she would be able to respond to questions with clarity. Quote, she burned through two oxygen tanks and was in a wheelchair the entire time. And her ability to speak forcefully and to be direct and frankly, to be so crystal clear about how real estate works and in particular instruments within the structure of a mortgage transaction, it was a master class. And I just want to give tribute to Shani. Mott, I wish I had met you. I wish I'd had you on my show to discuss whatever you had on your mind, because you sound like a really courageous, brilliant person. All right, without further ado, I'm going to bring on my distinguished guest and ask him to introduce himself, and then we're going to go back to talking disreputable characters. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Kraft, and I am in Phoenix, Arizona. I am a native of Evanston, Illinois, so I'm still an honorary Chicagoan, right, Ben?
Yes, an old dear friend of mine. I met Steve when he was in seventh grade. We've talked about this in the past, and now he's a regular on my show for years. He was Fox. He was the Mike Flannery of Arizona, as I would just, I'll just say that. And the man knows Arizona politics inside and out, and it's just so fortuitous that we've reconnected on the show. Because Arizona, well, first of all, Steve also shares my passion with politics in general. So we could probably do national politics without any problem. But Arizona is so key to the future of democracy. This is me speaking, not Steve. Steve, you can say what you will. In my humble opinion, Arizona is so key to the future of democracy, small d, in the United States. Donald Trump has made it clear that if elected in 2024, he will essentially turn this country into a monarchy. And apparently 45% of the populace is agreeable with that. And so democracy is at stake. It's on the ballot, so to speak. And with our insane electoral college system, Arizona is pivotal. In 2020, as Steve knows, Arizona was the state that put Biden over the top, much to the outrage of MAGA, who wanted very much for Arizona to be called for Trump, whether he won it or not. And so there's several races in Arizona that I'm watching, not the presidential race, of course, but Carrie Lake. And Steve is perhaps the country's foremost authority on Carrie Lake. I don't even know if Carrie Lake knows herself as well as Steve does. So, Steve, that's sort of my introduction. We'll start with the Carrie Lake race. Why don't you give folks just a update. Or to set the table, so to speak, as to the characters in that race, the candidates in the race, and where we're at right now. Go ahead.
Well, Carrie is in a two-way race. It was going to be three candidates, but Kyrsten Sinema, who had become an independent, having changed from being a Democrat, saw the handwriting on the wall. No one much likes her anymore, so she bagged it. So she's just going to cash out and go work for Big Pharma or whatever, hedge fund or whatever. So she's hanging him up. And that leaves Ruben Gallego, who is a congressperson from the west side of Phoenix, represents a largely Latino district. He is a Chicago native, by the way, grew up somewhere near Midway Airport and Evergreen Park, and then went on to Harvard and then became a Marine and was in heavy combat in the Iraq War in 2007-ish. And came down to Arizona after that, did some labor organizing, got involved in politics, and organized veterans for Veterans Affairs, and then ultimately became a U.S. congressperson. And he's a progressive. And he's running against Carrie Lake, who's my former colleague at Channel 10, which was a CBS station for quite a long time and then was purchased by Fox and became owned and operated just like Fox 32 in Chicago. And Carrie was an anchor there for about 22 years. And she was one of the top anchors in this market. And this is the 11th largest market in the country. So she was a major television star in throughout Arizona, and she's tried to leverage that notoriety to win the governor's race first a few years ago, which she lost narrowly by about 17,000 votes out of 3.4 million cast. And now she's running for U.S. Senate, and that's where we stand right now. By the way, for you folks in Illinois, she is from the Quad Cities area, and she went to the University of Iowa, where she is bringing disgrace to Hawkeye Nation.
I was going to say Hawkeye's everywhere. Like, don't link up to her.
She's messing it up for everybody. Yeah,
Caitlin Clark's like, no, we don't want anything to do with her.
And you know, Carrie's the youngest of nine kids in her family. And some of them have publicly said that, no, we don't support her. Yeah. So it's one of those kind of situations.
And as Steve pointed out to me before we went on the air, and he'll probably have to point out to me many, many more times, it's her name is spelled as though it were Kari, but she pronounces it Carrie, and she's no relation whatsoever to the lead character in Stephen King's classic novel, which is just celebrating its 50th anniversary. And I will refrain from going down that road because it could be a half an hour of conversation about our favorite Stephen King novels. So I just for a moment reflect upon that. that connection you have to Carrie Lake, you both worked at the same station together. And the person she was when she was a very popular news anchor and the person she is today, it's in some ways, it's sort of a startling transformation. And I can't think of anything like it in Illinois or Chicago, where a news anchor traded in her popularity, so to speak, and became MAGA. Talk about it a little bit.
I don't think that would last at all in Chicago. But down here, you know, roughly half the state is that's the way it is down here. So she had, you know, probably saw an opportunity. When I knew her, you know, I knew her for 20 years plus. You know, I would go on the air a lot at 5 o'clock, and she was the 5 o'clock anchor. And then she was on at 9 or 10, whatever. And I would be on at that hour and I would hang out with her. We put on makeup next to each other for years and years. She, at the time that I worked with her, was what I would call a performative liberal. She was not just a liberal person, but she was a loud and out and proud liberal in Arizona, which is a place where, you know, at least 20 years ago, there weren't that many liberals making a whole lot of noise. Now it's a little bit different. But she was for gay rights. She was for gay marriage. She had a lot of gay friends, and really that was a big deal to her. She did have, you know, she donated, I should say, to the Obama campaign, which is unusual for an anchor to do, which is, I think, a bad idea for a journalist to do, but she did. And she had a drag queen perform at her kid's birthday party, who she has now renounced, this, you know, drag queen. So she was, she used to go on vacation to Cuba with her husband. She liked to go to smoke pot before it was legal down here, which it is everywhere. And so she was, you know, a real, you know, proud liberal Democrat with all the trimmings. And somehow in the last couple of years, starting with, I would say during the Trump administration, the latter portions of the Trump administration, she somehow grew disenchanted with journalism, having done little or none of it except read what other people wrote. And then that morphed into a very broad attack against American television, local television journalism, and national as well. And then she had a number of crackpot theories that sort of percolated in her mind. And then somehow a switch was flipped around the time of COVID, and she became, she quit her job and started hanging out like at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, where all the real nut jobs hang out together, which they held in Phoenix one year. I covered it. Of course it was here. And and then she decided that she wanted to be the prom queen of Arizona. It wasn't enough just to feel this way, and which is fine, you know, it's her right. But, you know, instead of like running for city council or the mayor of Payson, Arizona, or some, you know, resort town or whatever it was, or getting involved in a charity, she just had to be the governor of the state. And I swear, I had no doubt that she had no clue how a bill becomes law, even to this day. But she decided she was going to leverage her fame and become the governor. And she's really good on camera. She has a very kind of soothing voice. And so she can tell a complete bald-faced lie in a mellifluous and engaging way. And she connects with a lot of people. And she very quickly drew a very large following, leveraging her fame. And was a serious candidate for governor and just barely lost. And the reason she lost is she pissed off all of the remaining dwindling number of reasonable Republicans, McCain-type Republicans, Mitt Romney-type Republicans, Mormon Republicans. So it's a large Mormon community here in Arizona, second only to Utah. But she alienated just enough of those people and insulted them just enough and just enough of them to lose the election. And then, of course, after that, she denied that she lost, and she's been waging this ridiculous campaign for several years now, and we can get into that. But now she's running for Senate, so she's rubbing salt in her own wounds.
All right. Yeah, we can get into that. Denied that she lost. I'm going to resist the temptation to ask more about the transformation of her, because I cannot resist. Just the description you gave of a woman who was proudly open-minded about something like, having friends with gay people and turning into a MAGA person. And so much of MAGA is based on being fearful of people who are different than you, including gays. Steve, I'm struggling with this. Like, how does she defend this transformation? How does she defend the point of view, the worldview of the MAGA movement that she's now?
I don't know. I don't get it. But doesn't everyone know someone who's flipped out? Don't you know someone who just, just kind of some switch was flipped? Maybe they got COVID. Maybe who knows what it was? Maybe it was.
Well, I do. Okay.
So, the body snatchers.
So, all right. I'll give you an example of somebody who who has gone through a kind of similar transformation in many ways. There's a political theorist who's probably in his 80s by now named David Horowitz. Back in the 60s, he was a radical leftist. I believe his parents were communists. He comes from a leftist tradition. He was friends with Huey Newton and Black Panthers in California. And then there was a murder of a woman that he asked the Black Panthers to hire as a bookkeeper. And he believes that Huey Newton was somehow accountable or responsible for that murder. And Horowitz says this is what changed him. In other words, so he went through it, then he's a transformation, and now he is MAGA. But he links it to this one thing, the murder of a woman that he blames Huey Newton for. So
I don't know. I don't get it.
You know what I'm saying? That okay, yeah. I understand it. Now that was what twisted you to Bakari Lake, there's no moment like that, that
no.
I can see.
I don't know. She just must have seen an opportunity, and I don't know. I think some of it must be tied to ego. She was always really interested in being the most popular person. They used to keep something called the Hunger Games at my old station. It was a chart in which everyone's social media score and impressions was calculated and ranked. And you people competed to be at the top, the most talked about personality, because that translates to Q rating, which is how well known you are in the market, and then ultimately your ratings, your Nielsen ratings that keep your job right for you. So maybe she just was such a glutton for attention, and that was her thing, that she saw an opportunity to pick this up and make herself the most powerful woman in the state. Maybe it's just a pure power grab rather than something she believes. I don't know, but she's become a very, she wears a cross all the time now, and she's, always, acting like she's more moral somehow than the rest of us. And, if you're not in the MAGA world, you don't get it.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
I don't even know if MAGA gets it. All right, let's get back to election denialism. Yesterday, the story broke. I sent you the article that was in the Washington Post. This is a mini trend going on with MAGA, where post the presidential election of 2020, MAGA people like Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump, made outrageous claims and assertions about cheating, none of which could be verified. Lawsuits have been filed, defamation lawsuits have been filed, and a tactic that Giuliani employed, and now apparently Carrie Lake is employing, is don't even go to discovery. Don't even make an attempt to justify whatever outrageous accusation, defamatory accusation you made. Just go before the judge and see what your penalty is going to be, and then take it from there. A total cop-out. Why don't you explain what exactly Carrie Lake did that, and its similarity to Giuliani in Georgia? Go ahead.
Well, there's a county recorder here. In Maricopa County, which is like Cook County, it's by far the largest county in Arizona. It's where most of the votes are. And the recorder, the guy in charge of elections here, is named Stephen Richer, and he's a Republican. And he's a conservative, but he's not in the MAGA world. He's just a conventional Republican guy. And after she lost the governor's race a couple years ago, she accused him of all kinds of wild accusations about vote rigging and not counting votes and, you know, a bunch of criminal type things that swung the election away from her into Katie Hobbs, the Democrat who is our governor now. And this was BS, frankly, and everyone knows it and she knew it. And there were repeated attempts by her to have courts throw out the election, and none of them worked. And this is in a state where a lot of the people on the bench are Republicans. But the people who are on the bench had enough integrity to dismiss these claims. Eventually, she said so many bad things about Richard that he received a lot of death threats, like a lot of office holders have here. And so eventually, he sued her for defamation. And the case was grinding its way through the legal system. And what happens in these cases is that there's discovery, and a lot was about to come out about these ridiculous claims and her the way she behaves. And she knew she was going to lose. She tried to have that case thrown out. It wasn't. So the unusual step she's taken is to say, okay, fine, I'm guilty. Let's just forget all that stuff and let's just move on to damages and let's just deal with that and whatever. The reason she's doing that is because she's in the middle of a Senate campaign and all of this damaging information about her behavior is going to come out in dribs and drabs as the wheels of justice grind along. So it's better for her just to rip off the Band-Aid, admit defeat, and then pay the money. And so the only issue on the table is how much she's going to pay. Now, getting money out of her is going to be quite another matter, even though she's made a lot of money, millions of dollars since she got into the political world, more money than she made as a news anchor by far.
How has she made money as a politician?
Small dollar donor contributions. She's got a very fervid base that'll, you know, chip in 10, 20, 30 bucks, whatever. And a lot of people do that for her, especially in the far-flung villages, towns, cities, exurbs of Phoenix, where she's most popular. And so she's got money, and he wants it.
I don't know. So, is that money?
I don't know. That'll be a good question. Can they get that money?
Yes.
But not, however they, try to get money out of her, she's been well paid, like leading anchors are, for a long time. She lives in one of the most exclusive neighborhoods in the Valley of the Sun in Phoenix. She lives in a really fancy place, and she's loaded. And her husband has some money, so Richard's trying to get the money, and that's where it is.
This leads up to an interesting development in MAGA politics. So again, Arizona is very much a swing state. Biden won it, ladies and gentlemen, in 2020. Now, there's still very much, as Steve pointed out, strong MAGA support in Arizona. I would say ordinarily it would go Republican. As Steve pointed out, Carrie Lake lost her attempt to be governor because she irritated and upset and the Republican, I don't know, establishment, what used to be the Republican establishment. I'm watching her struggle, Steve, to try to keep that MAGA base intact and make the political maneuver she has to make to win over McCain voters, people who still have reverence for John McCain, the late senator. And to this point, she'd made overtures to Meghan McCain. I think I sent you this article that was in the Washington Post. And Meghan McCain just said, and I'm quoting, "No peace, bitch." That's just, I am not accepting your phony outreach. I don't believe it's sincere. You crossed the line with the things you said about my father. Talk a little bit about this, her attempts to try to win back McCain.
Well, when Carrie Lake won the crowded primary when she was running for governor a couple of years ago, in her victory speech, she pretended to do a stabbing motion like this. And she said, we are killing the McCain machine. We are, basically they were stabbing to death the existing Republican establishment and that she was the new boss. And so you can't blame the McCain people, Meghan McCain, Cindy McCain, everyone else from that world for hating her guts for that. So she pissed off and alienated, I'd say, about 15% of the remaining Republicans in Arizona, just enough to make her lose. She's trying to win them back. And so far, like you said, she's not getting much of a good response out of them. The other thing that she's tried to do is when the Dobbs decision came out on abortion, Arizona has a law from 1864 when this was a territory. And remember, it's the 48th state. It didn't become a state until 1912. It really was and is, in certain ways, still the Wild West. And under the Dobbs decision, the pre-existing law in Arizona would take over as the law of Arizona. And the law of Arizona, since territorial days, was that there should be no abortions for any reason, including the life of the mother, including rape or incest, at all. That was going to be, had Kerry won that election, that would have been the law in Arizona. Arizona would have been like Oklahoma. Fortunately, for people who are in the liberal side, she lost. And so our Democratic governor has blocked that law from taking effect, and abortions are still legal here in Arizona, under threat, but legal. Now, Kerry's trying to get some wiggle room, saying, well, maybe we should allow abortions up to, how about 15 weeks? I mean, she's walking back her former position, which was no abortions ever, let's do the 1864 territorial law. Now she's like Trump, trying to figure out a way to kind of square the circle, so to speak, and, you know, thread a needle, mixing metaphors.
And how successful do you think she can be on this front?
Not very, because even in red states, and this is a purple state, over and over in red states, the voters have been very clear that they don't like the Dobbs decision and they want to preserve the right to an abortion. And it is the Achilles heel at the moment of the Republican Party. And Democrats have their own Achilles heels, obviously, but like the border or the economy for some people. But for Republicans, this is a big problem. And she's trying to work her way around it. And so far, I don't think she's getting a very receptive audience on that. We just don't know, and we won't know until the election, how many people come out to vote against her on this issue.
By the way, Steve mentioned a border. I urge everyone, when you're done listening to this, go check out the last conversation I had with Steve. It's called Border Wars. And it is a great, in my humble opinion, deep dive into the schizo nature of Americans' attitudes toward immigration, migrants, and the concept of an open border versus a closed border. Steve and I had this conversation well about 2 months ago, so I urge everybody to go check it out. All right, to dramatize the issue in Arizona, I think I've also sent you this article. I send Steve these articles. It's like my mother, may she rest in peace, used to send me articles all the time. Mm-hmm. Benny, yeah. read this. And yeah. I had already read them already, but, you know, yeah. I got a feeling that Steve's already read it. But just in case, I sent him these.
That's cool.
About a state senator, Eva Birch, who from the floor of the state house in Arizona announced that she was going to get an abortion. And it was a very powerful statement. And one I could not imagine being made from the state house floor of Arizona, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. That really dramatized the point you're making. Go talk a little bit about Eva Birch and the significance of what.
Well, I mean, this is like part of a national conversation that we've had with people in a number of different states who, for various reasons, really needed this service, who are going public with it. And the reason they're going public with it is to show people what happens in the absence of having a national law like Roe versus Wade. And her situation, in, you know, maybe in the particulars is a little bit different, but we had this woman recently in Texas who had to go out of state. Remember? Mm-hmm. And we've had a doctor in Indiana who was nearly prosecuted for doing a medically necessary abortion. And finally, that got settled. And I think there's been other cases like this in Tennessee where there's a restrictive law.
Well, the woman in Indiana was a woman who did an abortion on a 10-year-old girl who'd been raped.
Right.
I think that's what
exactly.
You're thinking about. And yes.
Exactly. Right. So
yeah, go ahead.
These things grab the headlines because, you know, unfortunately, there are cases where people have been attacked, they've been raped, or they have medical emergencies. And I think what we're seeing is a trend where people are demonstrating, very courageous women are demonstrating what happens without a national law. And this goes to the power of this issue politically and why, in a quiet way, I mean, it's just like this huge earthquake right under the surface that may erupt on election day. And I think, you know, not only with Eva Birch, but with every single one of these other cases, they're making that point. And Republicans are getting the message, and that's why they're trying to wiggle out of this by carving out exceptions or compromises.
It's really challenging for Republicans to carve that out, Steve, because as you know, there's still a very entrenched, I would say, majority of Republican voters who are absolutely opposed to abortion, and view any wiggle room, any attempts at finding the wiggle room as a betrayal of their cause. So, yes, this is a very challenging, difficult moment for Donald Trump, Carrie Lake, et cetera. And it could decide the more I'm coming to realize it's after the special election in Alabama. I don't know if you saw that a couple of days ago, where a Democrat won in a swing district, or a district that had gone for Trump in a special election for state Senate. She was running as a champion of abortion rights. So this is a very powerful issue that's not going anywhere. Before we move to from Arizona and talk about Ronna McDaniel and TV in the television world, I need to ask you, what's your sort of thoughts of how Arizona will go in the presidential election, Biden versus Trump?
Well, at the moment, the Democrats are going to lose here. At the moment, there is a chance that they can turn it around if a few things happen. If the situation in the Middle East cools a little bit, number one. Number two, if the economy, if enough people feel like there's a little bit more money in their pocket, that might help the Democrats. If the inflation rate is a little more manageable, if the rates for getting a home loan come down a little teeny bit, something like that, by election day, that might help them. And also, they're getting the band back together. They have Biden and Clinton and Obama. They're kind of getting the team going again. And if they really descend on Arizona and really work hard and really push the Roe versus Wade issue, and the Republicans make a few unforced errors, if those things all happen, they can win. But this state naturally trends Republican. The Republican voters tend to be more loyal. And the Democrats, you know, the Gen Z Democratic voters are very turned off by what's going on in Gaza right now. And there's not a lot of enthusiasm for Biden. And it is a lesser of two evils election. A lot of things have to go right for the Democrats, and they have to get the band back together. And if those things happen, they have a chance. And if Trump is a noxious enough candidate by next November, they can squeak by again. It's going to be very much in play, though, and a very, very close election, I think. And it could be very easily lost by the Democrats.
Man, I've heard that line before. And countless races, it could be easily lost by the Democrats. You can't overestimate the Democrats' ability to make unforced errors. On the other hand, as you said, if Donald Trump's a noxious candidate, Steve, I think we've watched this man enough to know that's the only speed he has. You know, just today, there was a gag order issued by a judge in New York. I remember when I read the gag order, I thought to myself, it's not clear if this gag order restricts Trump from making derogatory comments about the judge himself. And right on cue, within like 10 hours, Trump issued derogatory statements at the judge and the judge's daughter. Okay, in the Stormy Daniels trial, and so I'm like, this man can't help himself. But I think he actually found the wiggle room, to use this phrase, the wiggle space. So we'll see where that's going. But I don't think he can help himself. Steve, how many years were you in the TV news business before you retired?
I was on the air for 34 years at Channel 10 here in Phoenix, and I worked for about just under 2 years at Channel 5 in Chicago as a behind-the-scenes person, as a researcher there.
All right. Close to 40 years in the news business. So help listeners understand the concept of a paid contributor on a national, like a Fox or MSNBC. This is something I do a 7 podcast drops a week. I don't pay anybody, any guest to come on this show. I reach out to a lot of our old friends like you, or people I've covered down through the years in Chicago politics. Would you come on my show? You get an opportunity to speak your mind, give your worldviews, battle with me if necessary. No one's getting paid. I may be old school here, Steve, and I apologize for being that way. I do not understand this concept. To me, it kind of dilutes the significance of what the person is saying to bring in money. And just the thought, like you, in your 40 years you were in the business, you're reaching out, you're doing a story. Someone goes, if you want my take, you got to pay me. And you would say, no, I'm not going to pay you. That's antithetical to what this journalism news gathering thing is about. So explain to me how that gets thrown out the window for a paid contributor. And I'm doing this, of course, in relation, we've been talking a lot about this, Ronna McDaniel, who was hired by NBC to be a paid contributor. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, people do have to make a living, even though she, I guess, comes from the Romney family. Presumably money is really not an issue for her, but people feel validated by being paid, and everyone else is getting paid, so why shouldn't they? And NBC makes money. It's a for-profit operation. It's not NPR. So why not? Why not get paid? All the other people doing the interviewing are getting paid, and she's got a certain expertise, if you will, and that she feels she should be paid for. It's like someone who's an expert in aviation. If there's some mishap with an airplane or some issue with the airlines, problem with United Airlines planes or whatever, Boeing, you know, well, then people sometimes want to be paid for lending their expertise. This is not a charity. I understand that. But the problem with it is, and I ran into it a lot with people, and sometimes we just couldn't put people on the air because they wanted money. But on the other hand, there were plenty of people, if you said it was an important enough issue, who would talk to you without demanding money. And so I don't really knock her for wanting to get paid. There's lots of contributors who have expertise and they contribute to the ratings, and NBC is not they're making money. So they want their piece. The problem in her case was that she's an election denier. And there's a difference between being a conservative person, which is great, and being an election denier, which would be like paying, Jefferson Davis to write a column for the New York Sun in 1868, right? Yeah. Why would you do that? That's it. So that's the distinction, and that's why they had that revolt at NBC.
All right. So let me try this tack with you. So as we discussed briefly in the last time Steve was on the show, back in the early 70s, he was one of the outstanding debaters at Evanston Township High School. This is true. I'm not making this up. Steve Kraft was a great debater. And what they tell you in debate, I did debate for maybe a day, and then I realized how much hard work it was, and I quit. Steve persevered. What they tell you in debate is on any given day, you have to argue either side of the issue. So it could be, the issue could be resolved. Getting money to appear on a TV show as an expert is a violation of the ethics of journalism. Okay. And you have to argue, yes, it is a violation of the ethics of journalism. Or they may say, Steve, you have to argue, no, it does not violate the ethics of journalism. So when you gave that defense just about a minute ago of paying people to go on the air and speak whatever it is they have to say, did you believe it in your heart of hearts, or were you going back to your days at Evanston High School where occasionally you would have to argue something you didn't believe in? Go.
Well, I believe it. I think it's okay if you're going to be a consistent contributor. You're part of the cast. If you're part of the cast, you should get paid. Why not? It's not like, these people are all making a buck. All the executives are getting paid. Everyone in the room's getting paid except you. I don't have a problem with that if they were paying for her expertise in the same way you might pay someone for being an expert on soccer who comes on and does stuff, you know. And that way you can put it in the contract so they're exclusively yours. So there's some consideration involved, as they say in law. The broadcast outlet is getting something of value that's unique that they can promote and that brings in an audience, and they're all getting money out of it. So sharing some of that with that person is fine. If you interview someone just about a regular story, no, you don't pay people, and they shouldn't ask for money. And whenever they did, which happened to me on occasion, you know, like someone, I saw the fire. Can you give me $50 and I'll, no, we didn't do that. But if it's someone who wants to join the staff as your expert in wildfires when it's wildfire season,
yeah,
which we have here every year, forest fires in this state, okay, I can see that. In her case, I didn't really have a problem with the payment part. I had a problem with the fact that she was arguing for someone who was a traitor.
All right, so let's get into that. Let's get into that. We will agree to disagree on the first part.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm getting paid for this, aren't I?
Yeah, the check's in the mail. I didn't tell you that.
Yeah, right. That rubber check.
Steve's getting rich from his appearances on the Bendrovsky podcast. The empire that I've created here, my media empire from my attic overlooking an alley. So we'll put that aside. I'm actually with the guy who wants the $50 to tell you. If you're going to pay her, he should get his $50. I don't care.
That's right.
Yeah, fair is fair. His expertise is every bit as valuable as hers. All right.
And remember, these are multi-billion dollar corporations.
That is correct. Oh, I'm not crying. Trust me.
This ain't the BBC, man.
It's not like the Reader. No. So
the Reader, I work for free.
She got $300,000, Steve. $300,000. That was her contract. Wow, man.
They probably paid her off, too. Oh, you know, they paid her off.
Yeah. I mean, it's a contract. Although, I don't know. You're the lawyer. I'm not the lawyer.
I'd have to see it. I bet you they paid her off to pay her to go away.
Go away, yeah. just go away here. Beat it.
Get out of here.
All right. So now we're in the issue of, and I've read the comments from the hierarchy at NBC justifying this. They want to be fair. Okay. So they want to be fair in their presentation to listeners. And so to do that, they're going to pay some Democrat to come on and they're going to pay a Republican to come on. But apparently, if you're an insurrectionist, that's too far. Now, there's so many issues here, Steve. Going back to you could debate this one all day at Evanston High School versus New Trier. By the way, Steve, mop the floor
for New
Trier on a regular basis. Okay. I mean, if 45% of the country believes the lie that the election was stolen, how could you possibly be quote unquote fair if you're denying?
You can't. And that's why they had a revolt.
No, I don't think. How could you be fair to that 45% if you deny their voice a spot on your news show? That's what I'm saying. If you're going to be fair, 45% of the country agrees with the Carrie Lake position before Carrie Lake dropped that position because she wanted to get elected. So she needed it. So it's what a bunch of fraud they all are. But you see my point? How are you being fair if you say anybody who agrees that there was an insurrection is not welcome on our show? Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's journalism, right? It's supposed to be the truth business, or at least fact-based, if nothing else. Reality-based, I mean actual reality, not invented reality. And so if you're going to start giving airtime and space to fabulists, you are violating the very basic, most basic code of journalism. So you're not even doing journalism. You're just peddling a lie. You're doing propaganda. And, you know, at least the major networks haven't gotten into the propaganda business, I don't think. So I have no problem with excluding these people. And if they don't like it, that's just too bad. You can find legitimate conservative people who operate within the four corners of our democracy. And if people want to be out there with Hitler wannabes or whatever their deal is, they want to be dictators, you name it, that's on them. They can go to, frankly, they can be on Fox. And they will be on Fox. And they could be on One America News Network. And they can be on Newsmax and all these other fringy networks that people watch. They can be in Russia Today. If they want to be on RT, they can go ahead and do that. There's places for those folks. But this is our country does have a proud tradition of trying to get at the truth. And if you start peddling falsehoods and fables and fantasy, you're not doing the news anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a good response to it. I find that a very acceptable response from the debater from Evanston High School.
Thank you.
Sorry, new chair. We're out of time. You don't get to respond. But it does. Yeah, because then the issue is not fairness. So the issue is not like the issue, like they want different all sides covered. But essentially what the real journalists are saying is we feel no compelling reason to cover a side that promotes out and out lies, you know. And so it's not like if I think the one thing that Trump did that had a significance outside of MAGA, it would be the tax break. So you could bring on Republicans who cheer Trump for the tax break, but we're not bringing on Republicans who cheer Trump for lying about the election. Is that
right? And that's entirely legitimate. I have no problem with excluding people who want to talk about, who want to peddle the insurrection stuff, that they don't belong in the air.
Yeah. By the way, are you following, you mentioned RT, Russia Today, and I mean, you talk about what the United States could become. This is why I say the stakes are so high. I'm watching how Putin is trying to control the flow of information in Russia right now regarding the assault on the concert hall where over 100 people were killed, and he wants to promote the notion that it was Ukrainian in its origins, even though it clearly wasn't. And it's just, wow. The journal.
Yeah. It's a very slick product. If you watch RT at all, you can see it online. It's very slick. Over the years, they've hired American journalists too. I'm sure they pay them real well. But, and if you've ever watched like Russian television translated, I mean, it's the production values are every bit as sharp as anything you'll see in our country. The sets are great. You know, it's very slick. Animation's good. It's just not true. That's the part. The only problem is that it isn't true. They left that part out, but the rest of it looks great.
Yeah. It's just not true.
It's not true.
Yeah, Larry King. By the way, when I said his name, I did it, Larry King imitation. I didn't like Larry King.
Larry,
hello, man. Steve Kraft, Phoenix, Arizona. I'm a huge fan of Larry King. May he rest in peace. I used to listen to his radio. When he was on the radio, I used to listen to him all the time.
Me too.
He went for RT. I don't know if you know that. Near the end of his career, he went to
World. God, that guy. Just, you know, these guys, they do this for a zillion years. They just can't give it up. I guess it's true in a lot of areas of life. People do this and they achieve fame and they just can't let go.
You know what? Larry King could have gone. He could have gone, quote unquote, back to just being I take just out of the sentence, going on radio, lower the stakes, not be on national TV. He'd been outstanding. I stand by it. My memory, who knows how it would stand if I listened to it nowadays, Steve, but late 70s, Larry King live.
Yeah.
Steve.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he was, wow, he was so quick. And anyway, all right, Steve, I could go on and on. With reminiscence, I could go into the area of Trump and his IPO. We'll save that for another time. I would love to get your thoughts on that. But I will ask you one last question. You're wearing a Blackhawks hat. Are you pandering to the Chicago audience here?
Total.
None of them can see you. Or are you still a Blackhawks fan?
I still like the Hawks. I'm a Connor Bedard guy. I think he's going to be great. He's going to be the next Gretzky. The Hawks, they won 3 Stanley Cups, right, in the last 15 years. That was pretty great. And my dad used to work at 333 North Michigan, and that's where the Hawks it was owned by the Wirtz family. And that's where the Hawks had their team shop. And my dad, when they won in 2010, saw the parade down. I guess it went down Michigan Avenue, he told me. I think it did. And So, and he used to take me to games when I was a kid. He got tickets from a guy who was a printer. We sat way up at the top of the Chicago Stadium. You could see that crazy clock they used to have, that bizarre clock, and that giant organ that looked like it was from The Wizard of Oz. And so I have an emotional attachment to the old Blackhawks, the Scooter Line, Stan Mikita, Kenny Warren, Doug Moens, Glenn Hall, the goaltender, Dennis Hull, Bobby Hull, Eric Nestorenko. Remember him? I think he lived in Evanston.
He did live in Evanston, on Maple.
Yeah. Yeah. So our mutual friend Peter Liebig was a big Hawks fan. And so obviously I have a residual attachment to the Hawks, even though the local team here in the NHL is the Coyotes, the Arizona Coyotes, which they're really bad. So I've seen the Hawks play here.
As I told you before the show, I quit on the Hawks in 1971.
Come on, man. Let it go.
Okay. So the reason I quit on the Hawks is because I was a diehard Hawks fan, even though I could not ice skate. My favorite player was Bobby Hull, and the Hawks not only did not re-sign Bobby Hull, they kind of insulted him with a low-ball offer, and he went and signed with the rival league, WHL, I think it was called.
And then he went to the Winnipeg Jets?
Very good for knowing that. I give you credit for knowing that, the Winnipeg Jets. So it was one of my moments. I had many moments like this in high school, and I would sit at the cafeteria table. And Steve may have been at this cafeteria table. I want to make a pronouncement. I was always making pronouncements. That's it. I am through with the Blackhawks. I am never. For all I know, young Steve Kraft was there. And then he would argue with me because Steve would,
Let it go. Let it go.
Let it go. Anyway, years later, it's a long story, but I had a phone conversation with Bobby Hull, and I told him that. I'd never been a Blackhawks fan since they let him. They got rid of him, and he told me what you told me. He goes, "Benny," call me Benny. Benny, let it go. And I'm
let it go.
Let it go.
Can we say? Can we say now, today, if we've achieved nothing else in this show, that you're letting your hatred of the Blackhawks, you're burying it, burying the hatchet?
I have kind of because I jumped on the Connor Bernard bandwagon a little bit.
There you go.
I actually watched a bits of a Hawks game, so I've kind of Bobby passed on.
If Bobby told you, it's okay. You have permission.
I have permission from the Golden Jet. Let it go. He appreciated my loyalty to him, but let it go, Benny. All right. We're going to let go of this show. Steve Kraft, thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate it very much.
Great talking to you, man. And until next time.
Until next time, we'll bring you back in a couple months again. That's Steve Kraft. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.